Talk with Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And here we go. The much anticipated, highly decorated, Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, hope you're doing well, my man. And I hope everybody there is doing well. Listen, I went to a psychic the other day. I knocked at the front door. She said, "Who is it?" So I left. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I actually really liked that one. I thought it was pretty good and pretty clever. And thanks to Duff once again for never missing a Friday. Always brings the laughs, I guess, sometimes. And speaking of laughs, we have a guest today who's been doing stand-up comedy in recent years. But more importantly, he has made huge waves in the wrestling world by appearing in New Japan and Impact Wrestling. I'm talking about the newly christened Nick Nemeth. Of course, Nick was known as Dolph Ziggler, but Nick's brother Ryan Nemeth in AEW, they've been a comedy. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Nick's more recent big news, the fact that he's no longer with WWE, debuting in New Japan. Big news in the wrestling world. Nick will tell us the whole story, including how Vince McMahon reacted when Nick asked for his release. We'll also get into his WWE career from his original tryout and signing to his first gimmick with Kurt Angle and Chavo Guerrero, to his work as Dolph Ziggler and how he got that name and why he decided to leave and start anew. It's Nick Nemeth right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. So we're here at the Agave meeting room in a hotel in Phoenix because we've got a very important meeting with Dolph Ziggler.
Yes. This is a very, you could tell by the size of the board meeting table, how far away we are. This is very serious business.
It's basically like a picnic table with a plug-in in the middle, but it worked out good. It's so funny, we just both happened to be in the same city on the same day and lots to talk about. And, I wanted to reach out to you because, first of all, congratulations on a great career in WWE, but more excitingly, this debut in New Japan. Kind of tell us how that all came together.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, I'm not close friends with a lot of people, but a long time ago when Shinsuke came up from NXT, at the time I was doing the thing where everybody who shows up wrestles me, and I was doing the thing. It was like 9 years in a row, whatever. But I'm doing that thing, and I didn't really know him. Like I don't watch Japanese wrestling. I don't watch our wrestling. I famously don't watch wrestling, and I hate everything because I was in a bad, not the best place. But I was like, I love my job, doing what I do. So right after WrestleMania, Shinsuke comes up, does whatever he does, and we're overseas. Do they do that 2 week overseas that we used to do before COVID times? And we're bouncing around in buses and things. And him and I had to stay to do the dark match after TV, and everyone else went on. So him and I are just in this car, sitting next to each other. We've put a couple matches together, but we're just like, I'm not really outspoken. I'm like just sitting there. We're looking at our phones, and I had requested a big bottle of Jack Fire whiskey, and we had that for the ride, and it was like, hey, you want to sip? Like, yeah. And then we started talking, and then we had a couple of whiskeys, and we were like buddies, and it was so great because he's the biggest sweetheart in the world, and he's like an ass kicker, and like, it's so great. He's so
nice. He loves surfing.
Yes. Oh, my God. So I went surfing once, and I was very bad, but I got up for a second, and someone took a picture, and I sent it to him, and he called me out on it, and it was great. But we kind of like had a good bond, and I really liked wrestling with him, and man, it really reminds me of his first pay-per-view match with us. I even offered, I go, like, he's strong style guy. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I go, should we have him, like, MMA style, f*** me up? And, like, we start having a wrestling match, and he cracks me and hits me with a knee, and I'm, like, out cold, and they throw it out or something. They go, no, we don't want that. We got Vince wanted a very, WWE style match. And I go, all right, great. So we did that. And a long time ago, I was like, every time contract time was up, I'm like, all right, I'm going to get out of here. Like, I have nothing left to do. I'm kind of just sitting on the bench. Break in case of emergency when somebody's out in a world title match or something. And I go, I'm gonna get out of here. And he goes, if you ever get out of here, I got some connections and I'd like to help you out. I was like, well, that's so cool. I don't know anybody or anything. So years and years go by. And I sent an email to the boss and I, very long.
Would this be Vince still?
Yes, this is Vince. Yeah, I sent, at the time we were not sure actually what's going on, but I sent Vince. Incredibly long email, 90% thankful, oh my God, you guys are so great, you taught me to do all this stuff. 10%, this is messed up, I gotta get the hell out of here, there is no purpose for me to be getting paid millions of dollars to sit on the bench or be like a 3-minute match, like a local. I go, pay locals to do this. There's no reason for me to be here. And I didn't hear anything back for 2 weeks, and then I found out that I was released. So
really?
Yeah. So
he didn't even get back to you.
I'm sorry. I sent that to a few different people. Oh. I don't want to name names, but I sent it to very important people. Vince was the only one who wrote back instantly and was like, this is a lot to unpack. Let's talk about it further. I said, sir, if you want me to fly to Stanford tomorrow, I will be on a flight. And he said, thanks, we'll think about it. And then 2 weeks later, I was released or whatever. So a couple weeks later. So first thing I want to do is like, man, I've never done independence. I haven't gone out of the country except for with WWE a million times, all these places. I go, man, I go, I'm still friends with Shin. Hey, Shin, do you think I'm still good at wrestling? And he laughed. And I was like, what do you think about Japan? And he's like, I got you. And then put a couple pieces together and get to Rocky Romero, who is the go-between. And luckily for me, they were happy to and excited to have me. And that was one of the first things I did, like, when I got released. Like, first, like, week in, I go, this goes back and forth and is set up. And I'm not saying a word. And no one's going to know. Mm-hmm. And everyone thinks I'm retired or doing comedy, but I'm sure as hell not going to Japan. Nobody sees this coming. I go, this is so great. So kept it very secretive, got everything done back and forth, and then even snuck in there and snuck out. And nobody knew, and everyone was kind of blown away. One, how good I still look. But like, oh, right, yeah, I still hot. But no, I was like, I've been sitting around for 3 months. And before that, man, 6 months, a year, even being on TV, it's 3-minute matches. It's not the stuff that I'm used to, like 30 minutes with Randy or all these things where you're just ready to go. And I go, man, I got to make sure I'm good to go. And we got off and running. And I really think it's going to be something special. And I'm nervous. Like, hey, am I a big phony? Was I protected by WWE for 20 years? We're going to find out. The answer is no, I was not. But it's, I got to go, hey, man, can I do this stuff at the level that I've claimed to be at, and without everyone going, here's how it has to be.
Right.
You're now go think out of the box, and maybe you suck, and maybe you can't back it up, or you're a big phony, or maybe you're protected, but I can't wait, man. I've been sitting around too long. I'm someone who, when we have 2 or 3 days off, I'm like, when are we getting out of here? Can I go do something else? But I've sat around for 90 days, like, this sucks, like, ready to go. So, like, I'm lucky. In 20 years, I missed like 3 weeks of work. It's insane. Like, nobody, and I've even put that in the email. I was like, just so you know, no one has ever done what I've done ever, or is even remotely close, including everyone on this email list. So just so you know. And I go, just wanted to reiterate that, like, 3 weeks in 19 and a half years. Like, so I want to be able to go, and I'm so ready to do it.
You know what I loved? And there's a lot of lots to unpack, as Vin said. I love the presentation, and it's really, because the same thing happened when I showed up in 2018. Just being there puts you on a different level, you know, and plus having your brother Ryan there with you as well. It just looked cool. It was a very Japanese thing to have the two brothers show up, you know, sit in the front row and kind of watch. Did you feel people knew who you were?
I'm always nervous. Like,
yeah.
Does anyone care? If I've been sitting around, you know, was I in this bubble of WWE where they care about me because I'm on this show? I don't know. But luckily, my brother, who knew so many of the people in the locker room, when we walked out, I go, man, is anyone going to make any noise? God, I hope so. And we walk and you just hear a couple, ooh, oh, and you slowly get as we're making this slow walk to the ring. And the best part of it was great idea by New Japan, was to send us out right before a tag match. So now you have these brothers who no one ever thought would be here are showing up. Oh, and they're here to watch this tag match. Oh, they're going to get involved. This is the best. Sit there for three other matches and then get involved. And I really appreciated that, because one, it gets the focus on, like, Ryan, who's really good at wrestling, and he's fresh faced and he's sitting there like, what are they gonna do? It's like, no, one more little swerve, we're going somewhere else and gonna watch, you know.
I love the kind of the irony that your first match in New Japan is against David Finley.
I hope that's the first match. I don't know, but like,
I thought that was the one that was announced.
If they did, I'm all in. I didn't know, but
that's, I think it's been announced.
If it's been announced, that's awesome.
Yeah, unless I just let the cat out of the bag. But I think it really has been announced. But either way, if it hasn't been announced, I'm sure that was the first guy you had an angle with.
Right, to see him and watch him. And the best part was, I was so turned off for wrestling for a long time. It was great to sit there ringside and watch not just people I knew. Like, I know Ambrose. I've seen Ospreay wrestle a couple times, but it was like, Finley, I hadn't seen in person. I hadn't seen him since he was probably 15 years old or something. And right. also watching all the other matches and just feeling the crowd being into them or not into them or where they're going with it. And that title match at the end of the night was so awesome mm-hmm. to watch because mm-hmm. the whole locker room's watching on this little TV and you could just hear the reactions of the crowd out there. And it was amazing. Finley, I call everyone kid because I just assume like he's young, fresh-faced kid. Like, what are you doing here? 6 months? He goes, 8 or 9 years. And I go, okay, all right. Nice. So let's see where we're going. And I go, I think there's really something there that I can help being in something with him and also tear it down with him out there and just beat the hell out of each other.
And just so you know, officially, February 23rd in Sapporo, New Japan, New Beginning, it's Nick Nemeth versus David Finlay.
Hell yeah, so, it's official.
I'm glad
all
I
right.
could pass that news
yeah.
along.
Hey, thanks
to
for
you.
Letting me know. Yeah,
I think it was actually.
I got to sign something. Is that why you brought me here to this boardroom?
Yeah, Rocky Romero told me get the boardroom.
So all these pens are in here.
Yeah, they write down some ideas. But the thing about this too, and I'm really excited for you to experience this. I remember the first match I worked with Kenny at the Dome. And it's just ingrained in our system. Who do we have to tell our spots to?
Oh,
it's
God,
like
yeah.
nobody. Like, nobody. Really? No. Like, if we want something on camera, we don't tell the cameraman anything because they have to believe that it's
you're
real.
Shooting it as a
so
sport.
It's gonna be. It's gonna and like there's no agent or producer. Yeah. It's gonna be you guys sitting there putting it together. You go out there and do it. I was like, really? Yeah. And that really reignited the passion and fire for wrestling for me,
yeah.
you know, which led to AW as well. But I remember, I'll never forget the because I did about, I think, 8 matches or 10 matches in 2 years before the lockdown. It was just like, they were all so much fun.
Oh,
so
man,
great
yeah.
to be there, you know?
That's a big point. Like, I know Ambrose for a long time. We're not tight. We don't really hang mm-hmm. out. But like, we bullshit with each other here and there. And it yeah. was like, he's like, dude, you're not going to believe it. It's yeah. the opposite of what you've had for 19 years.
Yeah.
Where you're like, hey, we're going to do this. Like, no, you can't do that. Hey, we're going to do this. And I, that's all in the positive way because one, it's a certain show for WWE
sure.
that you're doing. And we need this ball shot in the main event.
That's right.
So nobody's doing this and no one's doing that. And you're like, that's all totally warranted. And just, he goes, here, you now, it's almost you don't have that protection of, hey, we can't do this, we can't do this. It's like, hey, you go out of the box here and you try and steal the show from everybody else
That's
who's
right.
trying to steal the show, brother. So good luck. So
yeah.
I love that. Like, let's go, you know?
Is your plan to do like tours or just matches or?
I just wanted, so I've been very fortunate. I was the luckiest career in the world, but also the day that they announced everything, other than everybody saying such nice things for the most part. Especially on the internet where it's like 90% negative.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But everyone's saying stupidly nice things like rocks, you know, like guys who didn't know, like it was great. It was so ridiculous. But I go, a lot of companies reached out and were like, right now, let's do this. Let's go. And I go, I just got out of a long-term relationship. I just did 20 years. And I go, as much as I, in my head, I thought, okay, when this 90 days is up, I go right here. I go, I want to bounce around and be a hired gun and go to a territory and work with someone and make them the biggest star in the world and then either beat them or lose to them and go on somewhere else 6 months, a year later, whatever it is. And it was something I pitched to WWE a long time ago, like I think when they were doing like ECW mm-hmm. and all these different things. I go, can I be Intercontinental Champ that has people come out or we have a little story and every month, whether it's on pay-per-view or not, we get this big match and we make somebody and they either, and I'm Ric Flair basically bouncing around the territories
also,
and I pull up the tights and I sneak one out after he kicks my ass for 40 minutes and they talked about it for a while but it didn't come out. But I go, that's something I would like to do now and not just helping everyone out. I want to be a star too. I want to continue kicking
sure.
ass. So it's like, I want to do that. I want to bounce around, bring some prestige to someone who maybe doesn't have it. And there's some Japanese eyes that have never been on me. And like, we're helping each other out, but also tearing it down and making a title mean something. So I really hope I can bounce around that way. And then maybe 6 months in a year go, okay, I'm settling down. Let's do this with this company for a year and see how it goes. And then if you like me being here, hey, we stay around.
It's interesting you said something earlier that you never wrestled on the indies. I forgot about that. You basically
everybody gives me a pass.
Straight into WWF. Yeah.
Everybody busts Miz's balls. Because, and he worked independence. And one time we were overseas like 20 years ago or something. And everyone's just sitting around a table talking. And like, Miz, you never did. Like, and he goes, why does everyone say that? Like, I did him for like years. And I feel bad because at the time we hadn't come around full circle to where we pretend Miz is good at wrestling now or whatever. But at the time.
Do we?
Yeah. Well, the fans do. I think, but we got to a point where everyone was talking to this table. I go, I just get a pass because I'm good. Like, it's so funny. I never did the independents. I went wrestling college and then, like, trained a couple days and then had a tryout. And they said no because I was too small. I did a tryout with Bobby Lashley, by the way.
Oh, wow.
I walk in.
Everybody's
too small. They're like, you're going to meet a guy at the airport named Bobby Lashley, and you guys are sharing a car. I'm like, cool. And I'm standing. I go up to him. I go, please tell me you're not Bobby Lashley. He goes, yeah, why? I go, we got a tryout together. They're like, we're gonna hire him. I go, yeah, no shit. I go, this is my lifelong dream, and I would hire him right now.
Right.
Send myself to Chipotle or whatever. And got through that, and then
how did you finally get hired?
They said, hey, we appreciate your attitude, and you're an amateur wrestler and you're a fan, so we're gonna have a tryout with like 100 guys in about 6 months or a year, and then we're gonna bring you in and wait, like waive the fee or something. Go, okay, great. And then for some reason, a month before that, they go, hey, we're going to bring you in for a 2-week tryout. I said, okay, with Big John Studs kid. He's a hockey player and maybe an XFL guy, and I can't remember who it was.
Yeah.
I cannot remember him. So we had a tryout, and XFL guy is kind of making a joke of it. He's like, haha, wouldn't this be like? And you're like, okay, he's not like a fan. He's kind of mocking us. So
yeah.
I was like, F this guy, whatever.
But, right.
And Lance Storm is there, who ended up being my first teacher at OVW. But I was such a fan of his, and seeing him, like, I don't want to disappoint him because he's so serious. And everything. Yeah. You're like, there's no joking around. Like, I like, oh, is it like this? He goes, no, actually, it's 1 inch more. Just like, oh, thanks, yeah. Lance.
Yeah.
Got it. Like,
yeah.
But I love that. And I just wanted to impress him. So I'm like busting my ass in this 2-week thing more than I would be 1% more, except I'm trying to get my dream job. And afterwards, he's like, said all these positive stuff, and then for a week they go, we'll know by Friday or something. So I'm texting Big John Studs kid, nothing, heard nothing. Another week goes by, nothing. I'm like, man, they're just not hiring us. Like, they're not, just tell us, what the hell. Another week goes by, hey, you heard anything? No. Finally, Dr. Tom calls. They said it would be a couple of days. It's like 6 weeks later, and Dr. Tom, and he goes, hey, Nick, how old you say you were again? I go, 24. He goes, jeez. Oh, God. sorry. We're going to go ahead and hire you. And
I go, you asshole.
Of course he did that. I go, God, you fucker. It was so great. And I go, oh, that's great. And so at this point, I'm a little guy. I just came off my wrestling. So I was wrestling 165 in college.
Oh, wow.
185 pounds. Right. I'm 5'11", whatever the hell.
Which was that, like maybe year 2005 or so?
Yeah.
So where that still made a difference.
Yeah.
Now half the business is 185.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I was saying, really quickly, side note, when I got hired, 3 weeks later, Ace came down to Ohio Valley Wrestling and goes, 3 weeks later, new decree, 6'3 and over and football players and no one else gets a tryout. And I went, I still get to keep my job, right? They're like, yep, you're in. So it's grandfathered in some, like 3 weeks before total cutoff. I don't know how long it lasted, but it was.
Still, it was a thing.
Yeah, it was a real thing.
It was.
What the hell was I saying?
You're just talking about they're going to hire you now, and you're 180.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, barely. And at that point, you could get hired by WWE, or they could waive the fee to the school, and then you can get a part-time job and work at Perkins or whatever the hell. And then there was another one where they'll let you come to the school, but you got to pay for the school, and you don't get a deal. And I'm like, all right, even if they just let me come to the school, that's saving me $2,000. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I'll pay for everything else. I'll get a part-time job. And he's like, we're going to go ahead and hire you for $750 a week. And I had to like cover the phone like,
you couldn't believe it.
Pay me? What? And when I had done the trial, people said, at best, there's $500 a week. And I go, holy shit, that's $1 million.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, coming from amateur wrestling and bouncing at a bar, like, that's $1 million to me. And he goes, it almost like the Kramer shaking hands, like, we'll give you all the coffee you can drink before he says the $50,000 and shakes hands with him.
Yeah.
And I was like, I stopped myself because I was just hoping to get into the school and they're going to pay me. And I go, holy shit. He goes, well, we just got to make sure. Do you have a car and a cell phone? I said, yes, sir, I do. And then I hung up and I go, Mom, I need a car and a cell phone. And I went and bought a car. It was just crazy. Like, one lot. I was like, how about this? And like, drove it to Louisville 3 days later. It was the craziest thing.
When you first debuted in WWE, it was with the gymnastics guys. What were they called?
Even before the Spirit Squad,
I
was a golf caddy. Yes.
So yeah, you know, we don't have to go through the entire career here, but tell us, like, because this is the time when you obviously you spent, you're working in OVW. This is the dream. How do you get the call that you're going to be Kerwin White?
Not even Chavo's real name. His side character that he's making a joke. No, right. but uh, But here's the worst part. I want to say Dreamers, maybe the in-between at that point. And he calls me and said, hey, we got a really good report about you. You're a clean-cut kid. At that point, Kurt Angle's kicking ass. Right. Like, he's on top. He's the man. And they go, they've mentioned his name and yours a bunch. They're looking at bringing you in to where, like, he's your mentor. And it's like that Karate Kid movie with Chuck Norris, where he's like shadowing his mentor or whatever. Yeah. And I go, holy shit, yeah, this is my dream. I go, Kurt's the man. Like, Kurt doing so well is the reason I got a tryout at my size with no experience.
Because you were an amateur wrestler.
Yeah, just an amateur guy. And I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. And then a couple weeks later, they're like, Tommy calls and he goes, you're debuting on it's Saturday. He goes, you fly out tomorrow, you're debuting on Monday, you're a golf caddy. Figure it out. Okay, bye. And I go, what? A golf camp? Like, what? And then I figure it out, and Chavo there, who I don't know at this point, and he's like, he's getting sent this guy who's been training for a few months, has no experience, no independence, no anything. And he's like, hey, let's roll around a little bit. And I think the fact that I could roll around and, like, I could just go, and I was, like, listening to whatever anyone said, and he was like, okay. You're okay for now. Like, I passed, like, this mini test, and I was like, all right, great. And then I learned so much from him. In the couple of months we hung out, just, like, what to do behind the scenes, where to be, how to stand out if you got 30 seconds, all the shit in a couple of months. Mm. And then one day Eddie passes away, and then Chavo ends that, and had to take care of a bunch of stuff at home. And
that's what the character Chavo was when Eddie passed away.
That ended because we were going – that was, again, when you do like a Mania or whatever, some other thing the other half of the year where you do the two-week tour after a Raw.
Yeah, going overseas.
Yep. Yeah. And that's –
that's right.
And we were getting ready to go, and then that happens. I'm like, holy shit. They go, Chavo's staying back to take care of all this family stuff. And they go, you're still going to go. I'm like, oh, I don't know how to wrestle or anything. And they're like, don't worry. We know you're a manager. We'll throw you in there and manage somebody. You pull somebody's foot halfway through a match and then they take a punch. Oh, thank God. I'm like, I don't know how to wrestle yet. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm falling down, kind of, right? Mm-hmm. And this is, I use this in my stand-up a bunch. This is all real. I fly over there. They said, yeah, we'll find a match for you to manage somebody. And it's Fit and Steamboat are the agents. So I can get back at Philly for what Fit does to me. Okay, great. So... they go, no bullshit. 30 minutes before the show starts, no one has told me anything. I don't have any friends on here. I didn't work any independence with anybody. And there's some badass Attitude Era dudes that you don't like. Am I allowed to, like, be in this room?
Right.
Like,
yeah. Right.
And Fit is 25 minutes before the show starts. Fit goes, okay, you're in the first match. I'm like, okay, what am I doing? He goes, it's you and Tajiri, 12 minutes, him up, and he walks away. And I go, what?
Oh, shit.
And then he comes back and goes, I forgot to tell you. I'm like, oh, he's busting my balls. He doesn't speak English. And then he walks out. I go, what? I go, oh, my God. I'm like, shaking. I go find him. I'm like, sir, what should you tell me? I'm not good wrestling. I can't do anything. And I'm so nervous. I don't know how to do anything, like back rakes and a headlock. And that's, I like, scraped his back and they just kept putting a headlock on. It was so uncomfortable. And the weirdest thing is it kills me now. They don't open the show with a Babyface's music. They play Kerwin White's song that's barely been heard on Raw, but mostly on Sunday Night Heat. And I am coming out to, it's like a Frank Sinatra kind of song. It's like, I take my coffee by the pool or something. And I'm walking out with a golf caddy top and everyone's like, no one's even going boo or what. They're just like, huh?
This is how the show starts?
This is WWE. Who is this guy? Yeah. I don't match this. Like, I'm not even known for the music. Nobody knows who I am. We've done Sunday Night.
Nobody knows him at the time.
They barely know it. Like, oh, my God. I walk out, too. I wish they had been booing or yelling something about me because it was silent. Mm-hmm. And I go, this is so embarrassing. Thank God. Tajiri's music hits. The place erupts. And then all his shit, his kicks, everything, they're going nuts. And I just... in between a headlock and a couple of back rakes, I took a bunch of kicks, and finally he goes, big kick or whatever. Slap, boom, 1, 2, 3. I'm like, thank God this is over. I was so scared to death. It was so bad. I'm so glad there's no footage that I know of that. But that was the beginning for me.
But obviously you did good enough that they kept putting you in matches.
So that tour happens, and they threw me into a couple little things, and I was – still bad and didn't know how to wrestle. And at the end of the tour, Steamboat and Fit came up to me and said, "Hey, listen, you're a good kid. We love that you're listening and learning and you're picking up as fast as you can. Just so you know, the gimmick's over and you're done." Mm-hmm. And I go, "Oh shit! So I don't know wrestling. I don't know independence. I'm not a legacy. I'm not in the meetings." I go, "Oh, that's my time with WWE. It's over. Like, I'm fired."
Right.
And they go, "But they're putting together a group of guys, and we suggested you for it." I was like, "Oh, cool, thank you." And then I don't know what that means. I just assume, like, oh, they're just being nice to me. When I go home, I pack my stuff up and I go back home, or it's like, I'm done, I'm fired. Yeah. And they say, "No, it's a group of guys, it's gonna be really exciting and a cool thing." I go, "Oh, like a new horseman or something, like it's fucking Spirit Squad stuff." And then the rest of that is,
well, let's talk a little bit about Spirit Squad, because it did actually get over to a little bit of an extent, you know, but all the guys, it seemed, were kind of at your level. Was there anybody that had more experience?
Kenny, for sure.
Kenny,
yeah.
Dykstra. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And here's the funny thing. So I'm like 24, 25 at this point. He's 19.
Gosh,
right. And 19, but also explaining behind the scenes politics to me correctly.
How did he know all that already?
I think he like forged some paperwork or got paperwork signed where it allowed him to train at 16 instead of 18 or whatever, or 15 or whatever the hell, something awesome. And he gets that done. And I think he did something where he was in high school and he did like the white boy challenge with Rodney Mack, like out of school, like on Monday night.
Gotcha.
He came back to school the next day, like, "Yeah, I was on Raw last night." He's in high school. Like, what? And so like, that was cool. Like, and so he's this kid who's filling me in on all this behind the scenes stuff. And I just wanted to get better and just keep training. So I'm, Mike Mondo, Mikey in there also, he was like training a beginner class. So Rip Rogers would give him the key. So I go, "I don't know what I'm doing. I want to get 3 years of experience in 6 months. So I'm taking my normal class. I'm on the road. And I'm also, Mondo has a key. So he's letting me in and just like chain wrestling and taking bumps and doing all these things." So I got legit 2 or 3 years of training in a couple of months. Mm. And then I felt like, okay, I can at least hold my own in a very terrible match at this point. And then Spirit Squad-wise, we're in the ring every day just doing practice matches. Just I don't want to be hanging around. I want to be calling the shots one day. So how can I do this? So I just got all the reps in. And then we're working Flair, Sean, Hunter on the weekends, mm-hmm. every weekend. Like,
and how did that even come to be? How did the angle come with Sean and Hunter and the Spirit Squad?
Yeah, so we do a thing where we're just like, annoying cheerleaders and everyone's booing us out of the building, which is awesome. And we're getting booed so much that we do a couple things. What the hell happened? What starts it? I'm really bad. Have to ask TJ. But something along the lines of there's either tag titles involved or we like cheat and all five of us somehow find a way to beat Big Show and Kane at some point and become champs. But then it's like so accidentally hot and booed. It's not Vicky Guerrero booed out of the building, but it's pretty good. Like, I'm like, whoa, they hate us. This is the best. And so at some point, DX is like, "Hey, we're doing this." Actually, sorry, they're not DX yet. They reunite while beating us up. And Vince is aligned with us. And I'm like, man, this is the craziest thing in the world. I don't know how to wrestle. We're in this thing where we're in like the main event angle of the show. Vince is with us at all times. And Sean and Hunter are the other guys. Like, what a crazy thing. So just like on the weekends, I'm learning again. I'm getting 3 years and 6 months on the weekends. I'm working the two of the greatest of all time. And I'm learning from them. And we got to a point where I'm like, "Hey, Sean, do you think I could call a spot like at the beginning or something?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, Kim. We'll see you later." I'm like, "Hey, like, just I'd be like a back rake and like neck breaker or something." I'm like, "Hey, kid, you think you could throw a drop kick?" He goes, "Absolutely not." Okay, and put a headlock back on. But it was like I got to learn from those guys, and that just made me so much better. And at the time, you're like, "I thought I was going to be Kurt Angle's buddy. We're going to win the tag titles." Meanwhile, I'm one of five cheerleaders, and we just get our ass kicked every day. Right. What am I doing? And it's like I'm learning from the greatest of all time every weekend for 6 months. Okay, great.
I would see, I mean, I know for sure Sean liked you because he probably could see a little bit of himself in you. Same thing with me. Like, he was a smaller guy as well. Did he give you a lot of advice and a lot of help along the years?
Then, at that point, Spirit Squad times, I was still nervous to, like, talk to people. Like, I don't know, there's scary guys there.
Yeah.
He was something like, "Hey, man, there's no way." He was like, "This kid's going to be great." He was just like, "Oh, I was a nice kid trying to learn and pick his brain and ask him things whenever I could." And then eventually it became a thing where I came one point, it's years later, and I was like frustrated at work. And I go, I got taken. What was that, man? I want to say it's Mysterio and Morrison are fighting for maybe the Intercontinental title or something. And I go, I've been stealing the show or doing some things with Kofi. I just did quote marks if anyone's listening. Like, I was like, hey, I'm busting my ass doing all this stuff. And then for some reason, I'm out of here. I'm not doing anything important. So Sean's backstage one time, and I go, hey, Sean, I got a dark match with this guy. When I come back, tell me why the f*** I'm not on TV. And he goes, well, okay. And I go do this match, 6-minute dark match, basic ass shit. But like, I kind of stood out. And I come back and he goes, kid, your guess is as good as mine. Sorry, that was great. And I'm like, whoa, holy shit. Okay, great. And then maybe he can put a word in. Maybe he can do something. So I just kept asking him, and I not even thinking that he would pass a word out, but like, man, something's going to give at some point. And eventually, I don't know if he said something or not, but eventually it's like, okay, I've come back. I'm not the guy that I am now where I come back and like throw a case of water and go follow that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. But like, I come back and go, why am I here if I'm not doing anything? And eventually they go, all right, here we go. And I think I got a dark match with MVP, and they like halfway through like switch the finish to like catch us off guard or something. I go, catch us off guard. It's like, hey, we just added 18 minutes or something. Like, or we just took 8 minutes away of your 9-minute match. That's catching me off guard. I'm like, switch the finish. I go, okay.
Great.
Yeah. I pin him? Oh, fuck. What's that like? Yeah. All right. So they switch the finish, but as we're getting to it, they switch it again. Like, ooh, here we go. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm not as cool as calm as I am right now, but I'm like, oh, okay, we can fix that. And then he goes, you got 3 more minutes as MVP's hitting his finish or his last false finish. He goes, 3 more minutes and make him count. And I go, okay. So I'd like, readjusted a double down into something else, called some other thing, and then we got to something else. We do 2.5 minutes and get to the finish, come to the back, and they're like, that was great. I'm like, yeah, what now?
And?
Yeah, what now? And then I think it led to a like MSG U.S. title match with Sherry Shepherd in MVP's corner or something, and they made it a big deal. And I was like, oh, that's cool. We got like a cool thing, and then slowly off and running a little bit.
Yeah. Where did the Dolph Ziggler thing come from and the concept of the gimmick?
So I'm doing all this extra training and getting it, and I'm sitting on the bench at Ohio Valley Wrestling and doing some stuff. Or is it Florida at this point? But I go, I'm doing everything I can. I go, if I get another shot, I want to let them know that, no, we're not helping him out by bringing him here. We need this guy on the roster to help everybody else out. So I'm waiting to hear what's going on. And then I get a call that says, hey, you're going to start on Monday. You're David Diggler. And you're going to be introducing yourself to someone. And I go, David Diggler. I'm like, why is that the name? And he goes, well, we needed something with the same letter at the beginning of each. I'm like, we needed that? I'm like, my name's Nick Nemeth, by the way, just so you know, like, is that a big deal? And we had just started like the reality era, and it's Cena and Orton, and nobody's selling, and it's people's real names. Like, oh shit, here we go. And they go, David Diggler. I'm like, what the f-? He goes, well, it's got to be a D. And it's got to be a D, first name and last. And we're going back into a meeting in 15 minutes, but the boss seems set it. And I'm like, oh, God. So I text everybody in my phone. I need some D stuff. My dad's name's Don. So I'm like, Don, Dolph, some other stuff. And then I get to TV, and it's still David Diggler. And I'm like, shit. And I find Vince, who I've never, I don't even think, met at this point. Sir, it's a reality era. You could Google my name. I broke records at Kent State University. That's how I got my tryout. And you're looking for initials that are the same. My name is Nick Nemeth. What do you think? And he goes, nope, Dolph Ziggler. And he goes, it stands out. And he walks away. He goes, that's it. And I go, Dolph Ziggler. I'm like, it said David Diggler on the paper. I'm like, okay. So I go, hey, can anyone answer what my name is? Because we're starting in an hour. And I just wanted to know. And it becomes Dolph Ziggler. And I'm like, man, no one's ever gonna know this or remember it. This is heartbreaking. And I'm just thinking, like, it's supposed to be me and Kurt Angle. We were gonna be buddies. Yeah. Like, this is bullshit. And, you know, and a year later, like, I don't even respond when someone yells Nick. It's like Dolph. And I'm like, okay, got it. But it was a weird name. I think he just wanted it to stand out because they had some, like, superstars matches planned for me and not much higher, I think, on that card. But
I do know one time when Bray Wyatt was called Michael McGillicuddy. No, it was it Henning's kid that was Michael McGillicuddy?
Michael McGillicuddy, yeah.
He was like, once again, this is Joe Henning.
Yeah.
Son of one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And Vince said, McGillicuddy. And they're like, wait, we don't have a McGillicuddy on the roster. That's his name, because he was hungry. Now, let's go to lunch. I wonder if you had the same thing with the Dolph Ziggler. Because I was always like,
you know, you hear a name sometimes, and I always say, can you imagine this name? Your new world champion.
Right.
And at the time, Dolph Ziggler. And it's like, that doesn't even make any sense. It's not even real.
It's not even a real thing. It really isn't. Like, I know that now. Like, people like, yeah. Oh, we've got used to it. But that, there's no way. I'm like, that's what I always picture. Is like, Big Show says, hit a finish. You can hit on everybody, including me. Yep. Okay, got that. And then, can you picture your name on that marquee?
Yeah.
No, I can't. Are you kidding me? My real name? Hell yeah. The signature I was practicing all through grade school and high school? That would be great. Yes.
How influential was Pat Patterson or you know, as an advisor? Because I know he was always talking about you.
Yeah.
To the point where one of the rumors was you got heat with Vince in the office because he was always pitching your name.
Let me squash that rumor because it's a fact. So he... He's so awesome. He knows so much. He knows the old way to do it, the new way to do it.
Yeah.
Me, and it's, and much like Michael Hayes, where I'd be like, hey, mother, it's 2020. We got to do it this way. Right. We can't lay there for 42 minutes. We have a 6-minute match. Yeah. And it's like, okay. But fighting with him, and he's so smart, and he's so good. And he's not wanting it to be like, yeah, we got this thing. He's like, here's a beautiful moment for the business. Mm-hmm. Can you make that happen when you're out there? And you're like, holy shit, I hope I can. And he's comically influential. Like, he's so smart. He's so good. And I'll say all the positives first, then I'll get to the me being ribbed for 15 years. but he would help me with so much stuff. And if I messed up some small moment of not laying somewhere for an extra second or not doing something, he would scold me. And I'd be like, damn it, you're right. He's and right. It was like, he's so right. And I feel like that's why I came to stand out. Like, oh, you're selling so great. I'm like, well, no one's doing it. So doing it stands out. Mm-hmm. But also, I wanted to go above and beyond. It was very cool in the reality times to be like, I want to be Randy Orton. Black trunks, black hair, a badass, doesn't sell and kicks everyone's ass. Like, yeah, we'd all love that. But also, Randy's one of the best sellers there. But that's matter. Right. But everyone's doing just the part, those parts. You're like, okay, everybody wants to be 99% strong, not lose, and not, okay, great, fine. Great, that's going to work out great for everybody. But I got to the point where I'm going to go above and beyond and take a finish, like an MMA finish. I want it to look like a knockout for real, not some ballet bullshit. So I kept getting more focused in on that. But then the pieces in between is where Pat was so good. God damn, so good. And it got to a point where he was pitching for me so much for years that the second highest that there could be in a meeting at that point was like, yeah, we're just to a point where we're just making you lose just to watch his face. And I go, oh, that's not a great way to run the company.
Yeah.
But also at that point, like 700 losses for 2 wins or whatever, I've found a way around it anyway. But it was just like, we're getting to a point where because he's pitching for me so much, they're making me lose even more. And
just
I go
to rib him. Yeah.
Just to rib him. And I go, well, the rib's on me, bro. Like, this is, you guys are paying me to work here. And it was like, got to a point where I go, I can, and I had this meeting with Vince a million times. I can lose 99 times out of 100. But if I don't have that one,
that means something.
You're booking a local and paying him a bunch of money. Like, what are we doing here? So I go, I can get away with losing way more than all your favorites, but I have to at least be a credible threat 1% at some point. Because for 15 years, I was like, oh, he's not going to do it. He's like, oh my God, he's going to get it. Oh shit.
Right.
Being able to have that when your win-loss record is so hilarious, I was very proud of that. And you just got to be able to do stuff like that. But just, man, hearing that every couple of weeks for a couple of years is like, hey, it's a rib on you. And you're like, oh, okay, so I'll find a way around
it. Why do you think, because once again, even me, you know, being your friend and a fan of your work always, I'm not even sure how many matches we had. It wasn't a lot.
Not a ton. Yeah.
But just watching your stuff, why would, in your opinion, Vince not pull the trigger? Because like you mentioned, we'll get to some of these. I remember the time he won the title. It was going crazy, and then you got hurt. But it's like, why do you feel he never wanted to go to the next step?
So first and foremost, I don't take it personally. It's sports entertainment. Yeah. It is business.
Right.
I got this guy. This is our guy. Maybe this guy, maybe not. And I'm sure being 5'11 didn't help.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Sean was kind of that height. But
that's how tall I am.
Yeah, I was like, okay. And then it's like, but you probably had a much better relationship with Vince than I did, but I still had one, but it took a while to get there.
Sure.
And at that, and it was so weird. It's like, he could trust me with anything, But then when it came to like going past the middle, it's like, we need him here. And you go, okay. And it's weird to watch. It's almost like if you're working in an office and you're watching everyone else, your boss is like taking credit and getting like promotions getting the promotion. Yeah. Like, we really need your work. Thank you for that. And you're like, okay, great. Again, it's business. I totally understand. But there would be sometimes, several times, right, where he goes, you're our fucking Shawn Michaels. God damn it. This, you should be the fucking man. I go, yeah, okay. Why not? And then there's times where it's like, you are never going to get it. And you're like, God, oh, dang God, it. Yeah, oh, yeah. God, come on. So you get that, and it's you don't want to pat on the back, but you just want to go, he would trust me with anything, a beginner, something, the most important thing on the show I'd be trusted with. But then to go be credible for a world title, be like, we'll put you in the match, but we're not going to like do anything with it. So I totally get it, business. But I want to say, even having a better relationship, I don't think would have changed that. I think it's something along the lines of other guys in the room not seeing the Shawn Michaels aspect as much as he did half the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's probably easy to talk about it once in a while. You're like, hey, we're going to do this. Like, are you sure? Like, oh, yeah, you're right. I don't know. And then I could see that happening. That makes sense. I totally get that. But I don't know how those meetings go, but several different times it was like, I got a text like, hey, they're doing something big with you today. Here's the deal. And you're like, holy shit. Yeah. And then by the fourth draft, it's like, I'm losing to Kevin Owens on Superstars. And you go, what were we doing? And like, well, you were going to win this battle royal. Then you're going to fight Roman. I'm like, wait, what? And you're like, yeah, but that was two drafts ago. So everyone, you know, spoke up and let them know that you shouldn't be the guy. Like, okay, hey, thanks. Yeah. Just good to know.
But that's how it works. I mean, it's my famous story that when Vince, with the Kevin Owens story, when he said, Kevin Owens is going to be the champion, you're going to go into WrestleMania and win the title as a babyface in the main event. And it's like, that's cool. And then the next week, Brock and Goldberg win the title, and then he didn't even say anything. It's like, yep. You know, and then once again, it's nothing personal. It's his, not. Right?
Yeah.
He loved the idea that week.
Yep.
Next week changed his mind. He doesn't owe it to me to explain it. It would have been nice.
Yeah, it'd be nice to hear. Like, if after some years in and some talks and like back with you, it'd be nice to be like, hey, listen, we're doing this. I go, hey, man, I'm a businessman. I get it. It's yeah, fine. Holy shit. Of course.
But yeah, so I know what you're coming from with that. But what was like, talk about when you did win the world title. Was it against Del Rio?
Del Rio. Yeah,
so talk about that. And that was the only time you ever got to that point, right?
I got handed a world title on TV once, and it was weird because Edge wasn't allowed to use the spear, and we had a big pay-per-view match, and he used the spear, but no one saw it. So the next day, like, Vicky gave me the title. I don't know. And then I was like, they gave me this thing. I'm like, oh, this is weird. Okay. And then immediately we had like a 7-minute rematch, and even Adam was like, can we not do, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, is either he has it or he doesn't, but like, I will say this, stole the show at the Rumble. We had this 25-minute pay-per-view match. I wasn't built as a formidable opponent to Edge, who's the champ, but I was a guy who was in a storyline with him, and I'm very proud of this. One, it's 90% Edge because I'm learning what the fuck I'm doing, but we have this match where everyone knows it's Rumble time. Dolph is not winning this match. He's not even like had a good couple of weeks of TV. You know how they sometimes like lay him out with your finish because then you know you're losing, and then have the pay-per-view. I didn't even get those. Yeah. It's just like, I'm taking spears. Now the world title match with the awesome guy from the Attitude Era and the guy who doesn't win. And you're like, we know the deal. We know it. Yeah. And 15 minutes into that, like 26 minutes, everyone is like, oh my God, he's going to get it. And I go, I've done my job.
Yeah.
Like, I had to go above and beyond to trick them into thinking that I can win
this. There's a chance, yeah.
And there's just a one chance. And then all these things happen, whatever. But that was awesome. I got to ride with Adam for years and Jay and to learn from those guys and to have that world title match at the Rumble with him. Like, man, it was the coolest thing in the friggin' world. Cool. And it's just, and then whatever. The next day, we have this great match I'm so proud of. Like, I hung in there with him, whatever. And they present me the title, and I think it's either that night or the SmackDown. They're like, Edge's rematch is right now. And it's like 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're throwing away this beautiful thing we did. And it was just, couldn't talk him out of it, and it was understood. So I took the best spear I could and exploded inside out and spun on my head and like gave him something. And it was just like, hey, that's the deal, and that's what he wanted at that point. All right, got it, no problem.
So let's go to the Del Rio match then, when you actually win the title.
Yes. So Del Rio and Swagger were fighting. Again, I'm a bad guy who doesn't win, but I did win that briefcase. So,
I never won the briefcase.
Yeah. Amateur hour.
I just invented the thing.
Oh, God. So And the best part is, Vince goes, I know you lose all the time. I know we don't have you talk too much, but you're going to try and cash this thing in a million times, and it's not going to pay off, and we're going to make you look like a fool, and you're going to use it to all this shit. He goes, the second you cash that in, it all changes, and we go in a different direction. Holy shit, okay. Mm. So all these almost cash-ins, whatever. They do WrestleMania the night after. Keep in mind, Del Rio is a babyface, and I'm a bad guy. And he is an injured babyface who snuck over Swagger and has like a broken ankle from the Swagger's ankle lock. And he's laying in the ring. And so earlier in the day, they go, hey, here's the deal. You're going to win. You're going to come down there. He's injured. You're going to hit him with the briefcase and pin him. And I go, you're kidding. Like, no. I'm not, you're kidding about the world title. I go, that's how we're I'm hitting an injured guy and just covering him? I go, can we have like 2 or 3 minutes to play with? I go, this entire crowd is the reason I'm coming out, because of like they have been behind me while I'm sitting on the bench or getting beat up. I go, and now they know if anyone's gonna not cash this in, holy shit, it's me. Let's tease them. Let's have it like I almost get it and then I don't. So we set up this whole thing, blah, blah, blah. I come down, I beat the shit out of him with the briefcase, smack his leg. I take his head, put it under my leg, hit a famouser on like a corpse, hook the legs, 1, 2, he kicks, and the place goes, oh my God, they're screwing him out of the title. Of course, only him. And I go, all right, great. And then we get to another false finish, whatever, get some stuff. And then he gets his arm breaker on me, and I'm selling and wailing, and they're like, they're going to make him tap on his cash into an injured guy. Oh, my God. And then like I told just a mini story of, like, he has a hurt ankle, and I got out of it, and, like, I was so proud. And they could just feel it as I broke free, like, here comes the finish. And they were all, man, the coolest reaction I could ever hear in my life. It's at Izod Center, so it's, like, Jersey,
yeah.
New Jersey. And it was just an insane, like, it's real sometimes, but holy shit, was it real right there. It was so
fun. The emotion
is real. Yeah, it was so real. That was so fun.
And then what happened after that?
And I go to the back, and Michael Hayes is someone who, much like Pat, I'd be like, fuck you, we're fighting about how to do this stupid thing that he's got a 70s way and I got a 2020 way, and we're both wrong or whatever. But we're in the good way yelling at each other, constantly just trying to make the show good or my spot. And he goes, make sure you thank Vince for giving me this opportunity. I go, hell yeah, sir. Thank you so much. And I shake his hand. I'm going to promise to do everything I can to make this mean even more. And he goes, well, I just wanted to take it off Del Rio for a month or two. So I go, oh, okay. Well, I go, I guess I got 2 months to change your mind. And he goes, okay. And then I go, all right. So
it's like, give the guy a night, right? Give him the moment. I mean, come on, man.
And so I almost appreciate that, because we do, like, there's great talks and there's some bad talks, and there's like, hey, I did exactly what you wanted. We stole the show, and you come in and he's throwing the headset down and you see him like, oh, God. So it's, you never know how it's going to go. That wasn't the best thing ever. But, and then everyone's like, oh, yeah, it was just, he wanted to take it off Del Rio and heat him up or something. I go, okay, but damn. All right, I'll try and do whatever I can.
It's amazing when that happens, because that happened to me when I won the title from Triple H in Wilkes-Barre or something like that. And it was just it was a show-long angle.
Right.
When people see me beat him, the crowd goes ballistic.
Is that the fast count?
Yes.
As a fan, I went nuts.
Right.
You're like, the story's so good that it's you amazing. Get it. I'm like, yeah, he got him.
Yes.
And I don't jump out of my seat. I'm going to Mark, I'm like, I'm watching wrestling to study you guys and figure out what's going on. Yeah. And I went, yeah, fuck it.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. And then after the break, I have to give the title back. And then the main event, I lose to Triple H. People forget that part.
Of course.
But I was like, why as a promoter wouldn't you see the reaction that I got that night and that you got that night and go, right, there's something to it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, and maybe he did. Because I remember he said, you give it up, you give it up tonight, but it's not like you're not going to get it back later. And right. I was like, first time he's ever said that. But still, you're like, the reaction was what we all, it's what Pat would teach us. You go for the reaction. Don't step on your reaction. So why step on this Dolph reaction? You know? So what was the next month or two like when you were the champ?
I think I'm pretty, so I explained, again, all business, no hard feelings. I totally, like, I don't understand how to convey this as I'm saying this as a business person who totally understands. The next Monday, I have a 6-minute match with Swagger and I'm losing. And I go, boss.
But you're the champ.
I'm the world champ. I've lost 900 matches in a row. I tried to cash in and got dunked on and hit so many bro kicks in my face for the last 6 months. You said it all changes. And today, in 6 minutes, non-title, I'm losing a match. I go, I don't care about me. I care about the show. How does this make sense? And he's like, well, we need to make it a triple threat, and we got to get him in there somehow. And I go, there's no other way. I go, what about this? What about this? What about this? He goes, you can't go into Vance and go, no,
right,
and not have 15 things ready to go, because you're just, it's instead of saying yes and, you're saying no to the improv show.
What else you got? Nothing. Yeah, okay,
nothing. Well, we're doing this. Yeah. You walk in there and I go, Vince, how about this? How about this? How about this? And one of our, or two of them were reasonable and was like, oh, you can do this other thing, or you could beat my ass afterwards, anything. I go, I lost 900 in a row and I'm going to lose right now? He goes, yeah, sorry. Like, and you could even see when you pitch like the three of them, you know, one of them kind of works for him. And he's like, but he's set and he's taking it. You go, damn it. All right. Fit goes, you need to get this changed. He goes, why would you ever be a credible champion if you, and I tried, couldn't get it done. We do a 5-minute match. He wins. And I'm like, I'm so embarrassed. And then we get to, I think, a promo on SmackDown. And then I think it's the next TV. We're setting up for a ladder match. It's me, Swagger, and Del Rio, or me and Swagger. I forget exactly how it goes. But that's we're going to do a ladder thing where we're both going to reach for it, and we'll do like a tug of war and get to something. And I went down to reach for it, and he punted me in the head. And we had like 3 minutes of spots and different things, including like Zeb, like taking a bump and all this stuff. And I did it on autopilot with like, I was.
So you had New York concussed.
Yeah. And even that, like, it was bad. It was like, that was the longest, like, two and a half weeks where I went, you've had stuff, like, I played football, somebody cracked you in the head and giving you a clothesline down the line somewhere. You're like, oh, man, I might have a concussion, whatever. This one was like, a week went by, and I go, I don't feel great. And I go, holy shit, is this is permanent or I'm done? I don't know. And I talked to Miz, and he goes, oh, man, I had a headache for 2 weeks after WrestleMania. He goes, if it doesn't go away, clearly you have an issue. But it was a week and a half, and I go, okay, I'm getting back to normal. There was a couple of days where I go, oh, I guess my career's over. Mm-hmm. I'm done. And I slowly just got back. And then we were very much introduced to CTE and protocols to where we went above and beyond to go, you're going to take more tests. We're going to give you 2 more weeks. We're going to do all this other stuff. And then at that point, like, okay, you're good to go. And then it was fine. But yeah, it was.
How did you lose the title then?
So the next match, so instead of me wrestling that pay per view, Swagger and Del Rio do Del Rio for a vacant title.
Oh yeah, to vacate it.
Yeah, and he takes it. Del Rio gets it back, and then sorry, for my number one contenders match because I still have the title. We come back to it and we do a thing where it's payback in Chicago, and Del Rio kicks the shit out of me, kicking me in the head, targeting my head. We do a double turn, and to where I turn baby from the sympathy of just getting my head kicked in. And it's like, it's gross. It's none of it was bad. None of it hurt me. It's a gross match because we're coming off a concussion and he just targets my head and he's doing all these cool kicks. And you see in his eyes, like he's trying to murder me, like in the match. Yeah. It's beautiful. I'm so proud of that match. And him and I had really good chemistry. Yeah. But he's like, there's this scary look in his eye. We're like, he's trying to end his career. Yeah. This is beautiful. And we had like this slow turn to where he becomes a heel, I become a baby, but I lost the title at the end of it. And I was like, man, one defense, man. But I think someone said you had it for 69 days. And I go, ah, that's pretty funny. You know, that's kind of funny.
So you start to wind down here. I just want to talk to you a little bit about your stand-up stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, you mentioned that you don't like being on the sidelines and maybe not getting used a lot. So you decide to go do some comedy.
Yeah.
Is that something you'd always plan on doing?
Yeah, oh, always. My brother and I, I'm trying to use an example, like for 25 years, if we went to the store to get bread for my parents and came home, we would just walk in and be like, is Ryan going to tell you what happened? And it's like, wait, what? And I'm like, first of all, the car's fine. It's fine. And it's just like, we just go into like, someone jumped in front of my car. I guess they're going to call. Like it's not the ICU, but they're kind of, and we've done that just improvising and screwing with our parents for 40 years. So I used to watch the old Saturday Night Lives, like the first 2 seasons on Nick at Night when they used to replay those. And I was into all that kind of stuff. So I loved joking around and writing jokes and writing a sketch or just screwing with our parents. And we did it so much that we got to a point where I'm filling up all these notebooks and I'm getting to a point, even when I have a full busy schedule, I'm working full live events. I'm like, I've reached a point 8 years ago where it's like, they're not going anywhere past the middle here with me, if not anything below. And I go, I like working here. I like doing outside stuff. They let me do a movie. They let me do all this other stuff. So I go, hey, on my off days, I'm just going to set up some shows because I don't like not being creative or working to get better because I feel like I can go steal the show or something, but I can only get to a certain point. And you're like, ah, okay. So much like wrestling, the first 50 matches scared the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. It was like the first 50 times I'm going out there, I'm like, people are staring at you. You're like, you better be funny. Mm-hmm. You better be good. And I'm like, shh, the mic's shaking in my hand. And then there's the, I don't know what I'm doing and I'm unknown. And then there's also, if someone knows I'm Dolph Ziggler, they're like, this guy's awesome at wrestling. He put 15 years in. This is going to be great. It better be. And you're like, so you have to like please them, but also I'm shaking and I'm bad and I'm writing a joke that I got. Remember the second time I ever did a 3-minute shitty stand-up set. I have Renee meet me in a comedy bar in Toronto. And I'm just like so nervous, but everyone there was like friendly with me and we knew from some other stuff. And they're like, hey, you want to get up here and do 3 minutes? I was like, yeah, okay. And now it's time's coming. And I'm scared. I've done one set in a Silver Lake coffee shop back room, like open mic where other guys were just on their phones and not even listening. And I'm like, oh God. And I right before they're like, all right, you're after this guy. And they go, hey, Renee, all I have is a Chipotle bit, which we've talked about before. And I go, hey, Renee, do you guys like Chipotle here? And she goes, we don't have it yet. Please welcome to the stage. And it's like, I have only a Chipotle story, nothing else, nothing in my back pocket, no bubblegum popsicle jokes to like say, nothing. And I run through it in 2.5 minutes. And I'm mad that one, I was embarrassed, but like in front of Renee, I'm like, damn it, Renee. Yeah, like, God. She probably thought it was funny until that night. Right. I was like, God, it's embarrassing in front of your friends. Sure. Something. Like, oh, it hurt. But here's the best part. You do that and you get off and you go, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Ooh, if I switch this word here,
right,
that won't be a clunky sentence. Oh my God, okay.
It's just like wrestling.
I can't wait to get back. And it's the same damn thing. You're like, oh, I should have just laid there and waited one more minute. You're like, okay, got it. And then I go, I couldn't wait to do it again. And the first one I did in that Silver Lake coffee shop, they go, you have no business being on the show. You've written nothing. So everybody here is open micers, but Andy Kindler's doing 20 minutes. And he goes, you're going to follow him. I go, of course, that's fair. So he just, no material, just crushes this room.
He's great, yeah.
Crushes this room. And he's been around for 50 years, and I'm a fan. And he crushes, and I go out, and I go through my 4-minute bit in like 2.5 minutes, because I'm just like going into this, and I run through it. But one, like the first thing I say is something, something, and I pause and say a punchline, and it feels like a minute goes by of silence. And I'm like, I can feel... like your joke about flop sweat or like getting a red face, I feel perspiration coming down my face. I'm like, and I look and I start to say the other word and I look and Andy Kindler, who was supposed to be leaving right afterwards, he's like laughing and say, yeah, that was, I'm like, holy shit. He thinks the dumb sentence I just said is funny. So I extra run through the rest of it. It's terrible. Nobody laughs or looks up from their phone. But just like a wrestling locker room, you get to the back and all the young guys are around Kindler and he's like, hey, he's telling war stories and giving them pointers. And everybody was, I'll never remember who it is, but everybody in that room was like, oh, they're mad about some other comic getting a push. They're like, oh, they didn't even do this, oh, and they just know somebody. And it was like, this is exactly a wrestling locker room. Like, I can't even make this up. Like, the old timer is giving pointers and telling old stories. Everyone's sitting around listening. And then all the young guys like us are bitching, like, this guy's getting a push and not me. And I go, we are exactly the same. It is crazy. Yeah. And it's like that improv aspect, just like if something goes wrong in a ring or you're just kind of feeling it out, that is all the same. But just in wrestling, you have another guy out there to kind of take some stuff off you. But on a stage, that little spotlight's on you, whether you're on a shitty little table or 15,000 people, everyone's staring at you. And whether it's make me laugh or I'm here to see Rob Schneider or something. I don't know who the hell you are. This better be good. And you're like, man, I hope it's good. Because you don't just get to be like, oh, you're Dolph Ziggler. Yeah.
How high up the ladder have you gotten in the biz?
So because it's like, it's not like, oh, this comedy talent, we sold out the comedy store. Like, no, it was people knowing me from wrestling. Sure. And like also having like a couple of guys that like bounce back and forth between wrestling and acting, and they're like fans and comics and writers, and we got to bounce around. We got to do two back-to-back nights, WrestleMania weekend at Caroline's in New York City, sold out.
That's great.
Like, one was sold out and one was 96%. I'm blown away. And we had a bunch of people on this card, like a bunch of cameos, real comics, Miz telling a story, but without like, it's WWE, he's like trying to be, tell a joke, and it's like scary and challenging, but like really fun. We did the comedy store, I've done the improv, like.
That's great.
It's, and I got to a point where for the longest time, Sarah Tiana, who is so funny, and she writes for The Roast. And
yeah, she was going to be on my cruise, and then she went and got pregnant.
Ah, she blew it.
Yeah.
I think I was trying to like sneak on as her plus one and like hide on the
news. Yeah, I've been trying to get you for years. Get anybody from WWE on you. Be the unknown comic too.
Yeah. Oh my God. The
unknown comic.
I would love that.
So Sarah Tiana was.
She's so good, and she's been traveling the world like doing stuff. So she knows how to deal with promoters, deal with a comedy club, get us the right thing, get everything we need. So she's doing all the heavy lifting, and she's middling for me as she's a full-on headliner. I'm a jabroni guy who has a couple minutes of material, but she's doing like 30 minutes in the middle, and I'm doing like 10 at the end, and then we do a Q&A, and we just kind of improv and riff, and it works out. But we got to a point over the couple years to where she could do a little bit less, and I'm up to like 20, 25 minutes.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and it's like in your head, like 20, 25 minutes, decent pay-per-view match. In your head, each second ticks by where everyone's just staring at your face, standing there. That's longer than an episode of The Simpsons. Like, that's a real deal thing. And I got to a point where I could pull like 30 and then do a little crowd work or something, but it wasn't great. So I was like, I had like a badass 7 or 8 minutes that I was proud of, but I'm a little out of practice now because I've been watching wrestling like a sucker. My brother and I, we got to do Hunkamania stuff. We got to bounce around and do a couple of shows every couple of months. Like, just do 2 or 3 shows and follow a AEW pay-per-view or a WWE thing or something. And just, so Sarah's doing all that stuff, taking care of everything. We got to a point where she could, like, take a little load off and I could do a little bit more time. Right. And we had so much fun. We got into a rhythm, and I was working with her and then opening for Mick sometimes, which really is great because it's a wrestling crowd. They're hot and fun. And he's telling Attitude Era stories. And then before that, I come out and I'm trying to do like, I'm at Chipotle or I'm on Tinder. But I also incorporate some wrestling stuff. So it's like we're totally different, but the same crowd is there to see both of us. And we complement each other really well. And then we can challenge each other's stories like in a Q&A or something. And it was like that. So I was bouncing around with her, set up all these shows with Mick, got a couple in, and then COVID hit and then shut everything down. Yeah. And it was like this 2-year break of nothing. Mm-hmm. And I watched people do Zoom stuff. No, I
watched the Brad
funniest
Williams
Zoom. People yeah. doing Zoom. Ruined.
It's terrible.
No way. I can't do it. Yeah. I can't watch.
So do you do shows now still?
Yeah. So I think even during that 90-day window, WWE was cool with me doing an appearance somewhere else, and just we did Chicago, LA, and we bounced around, and we're setting up a couple this year. Just one right after Mania happens, we'll figure out a couple other things.
That's great, man. Well, last few things. So New Japan's coming up, and are there some other places that you're looking to go to? Are those going to be surprises as well?
Yeah, I think absolutely be surprises. Some things aren't even like there's no ink on the paper yet, but we're working on some stuff to where it's like I want to bounce around, be a hired gun, work a few months here, work a year here, something like that, just so I'm not tied down. But there's still more to come. I'm looking forward. I'm going to wrestle at Primo's place at January 20th in Puerto Rico. I'm really looking forward to that WWC. That's going to be – I'm excited for it. But I will show up somewhere else. I got very lucky and fortunate to have some, like, Hollywood offers for some things. And also just Drugstore June just is about to come out. And it's little Esther. It's Esther Podipsky. And it's tons of comics, and Bill Burr like produced the whole thing, and it's a bunch of comics. And for the scenes that I watched, it was really good and funny. So it's like really funny people being good at acting and being funny. And
it's funny because Gabe Roth just talked to me about that. He's involved in the movie somehow. Was talking about Bobby Lee is in it.
Bobby Lee's great.
Baby, what's the name?
Oh, bad baby, Barbie baby, baby.
To catch me outside.
Catch me outside. I saw that too, and I was like, oh, whoa. Like, clearly it's a period piece that we're doing. It's like I have stuff like that. And my brother wrote this 3-minute movie that we made. That I go, I want to do like Evil Dead zombie movie and have it be like, I'm free to go wrestle somewhere, but also be Kurt Russell, you know?
Yeah.
So we had it, and Matt Levin directed the whole thing. And like, it was like me and my brother doing something. He's the main zombie that we have a fight scene with. And,
you super kick his head off.
It was the most expensive shot in the movie. He goes, I want goggles, people. This is real acid. And it's like, Maggie did everything. Her brother, Jake Hartman, was producing on the show and mixing some things with us. It was like this family-oriented thing, but it's like a long-ass one full day at a studio back lot with a cop car and a wall and a room. And it's like, and they did such awesome work. And I go, this is so an Evil Dead trailer, Big Trouble in Little China, all mixed together. And I go, it is like, what a fun way. And Downstate song gets played in it just a little bit, but that's my new song that no one has heard yet, except for 10 seconds on the end of that. And I think they said the first week of February that comes out, and it's going to be badass. So that song is going to hit somewhere at some point. That catches everybody off guard one or two more times, but
it's exciting for you, man.
I'm really excited. It's cool. I'm lucky as hell.
Last question for you: what's your favorite match that you ever had?
Favorite one I ever had would have to be me and Kofi on a live event that I can't even remember, because we got to a point where we were doing so many counters of counters of counters in a best of 500 series because they just wanted to always put us on that we were just like, how about we counter this and counter, yeah, whatever. But man, I'm trying to think. I had one. You know, there's a million ways to say fun ones, like the one with Edge at the Rumble, where we crushed it because I was riding his coattails. But there's a bunch of matches like that, and Kofi's up there with a million of them. And that Payback, the double turn we did. But one of my absolute favorite ones is working Kofi in Cleveland, and LeBron James had just taken his talents down south to Miami. And so I wore like a Miami jersey, and my mom was like front row up against a guardrail. It's the best. So I go, hey, mom, you guys are really close. You guys are up against a guardrail. You might get involved in the show. Who's to say? And they're like, don't you dare. I'm not doing it. And I was like, mom, seriously, if we do something, just be ready. She's like, don't you dare look at me, whatever. We do this match, do something. Kofi dives on me outside. Do something where I turn around, I put his arms behind his back, and I walk him over to my mom. She has no idea what's going to happen. She's up against a guardrail. My dad's next to her. Walks over, and the last second, Kofi switches it, puts me right in front of her, and I go, hey, mom, you should. Whap! She smacks me in the face. I don't even finish the sentence. I didn't even start it. I forget to fall. I go, what the hell? She slapped the hell out of me, and I'm dying laughing, blah, blah, blah. We do this match. I forget who wins. We go to the back, and usually I have the security guard carrying me to the back if it was a good match. And I stop, and I go, her. She slapped me. Get her ass out of here right now. We opened the show, by the way. It's the first match. And he goes, ma'am, did you touch a talent? He goes, no, I didn't do anything. I'm like, she was high-fiving people in the crowd for hitting me. Tell the truth. I want her ass out of here now. And she's like, ma'am, I'm only going to ask you one more time. Did you touch one of the wrestlers? She goes, no. And she goes, sir, to my dad. And he's looking the other way, like he's turned the other way, like he wants nothing to do with this. Like, sir, do you know this woman? He goes, I've never seen that woman in my life. Swear to God. I couldn't have written a funnier ending to that. He was like, because he didn't want to get kicked out. And it's like, I can't believe it. That's my favorite match.
Well, dude, it's great to talk to you and connect with you in this official boardroom. And congratulations. And February 23rd is your
match.
Yeah,
I guess I'm booked.
Don't forget.
Let me sign the paperwork that you brought over
here.
You're
booked, brother. Yeah. Thanks, dude.